we put him under every year. He comes and takes charge.
Ooh, should I start now?
Yeah, and now he's going to talk to us about hunting traditions and especially about the different kinds of initiations into hunting traditions of young hunters.
Good afternoon, folks. It looks like part of the crowd kind of dissipated, but that's fine. Do any of you ladies and gentlemen ever indulge in the hunting? Aha, we got one gentleman. That's great. Well, you're probably familiar with some of the things we used to do. Back years ago when hound hunting was really popular around the state, and it's kind of taking a back seat, not many people use hound dogs anymore because growth and prosperity. But anyhow, one of our things that we used to do at the very beginning of a hunting season when we were young, everybody would chip in $20 to the pot. At the end of the season, the person that killed the biggest deer with the most horns or antlers, heaviest deer, would win the pot. And the person that killed the smallest deer got the boogie prize. And that could be anything. Another thing that we would do back years ago when we were hunting is the first person, well, a young man especially, if he killed his first deer, he had a little initiation. We called it a little drenching in blood. That was to give him good luck. If he ever killed any deer before or since, if he gets initiated with a little blood, they put intestines over and everything. And it was just a kind of a traditional thing. And I was 21 when I got my first initiation. I thought I was smart. I killed a real nice buck. I gutted it myself because I didn't want to get all that initiation on me. But they tricked me. I didn't have enough sense to open up the diaphragm and get all the blood out of his chest area. So I was caught by three big strapping guys, a deer hanging upside down. They turned me upside down, crammed my head right now, came out, looked like a beet, blood all over me. But it was all in fun. And after that, we'd probably have a little toddy for our body. One of the things that we always advocated is safety. Boy, if anybody was drinking in the group, he was welcome to get out right away. We didn't want to hunt with anybody that was drinking and all that. And that was just always just a fun thing, and we really enjoyed it. And it was a great thrill to hear those old hound dogs get on a track, start trailing a deer, get closer, and you start barking a little bit more, and they really open. You'd hear them trailing, and the faster you get closer you get, it would get more intensified, and you'd start really chomping on it. And if you get a pack of dogs, six or eight, it's really pretty music. But a funny thing happened during those years. What we would do is we would, in the morning, when we would get ready to go put our dogs out, everybody would scatter out in the group. We'd ride these roads, and we'd look for the biggest deer track that we could find. Hopefully, that would be a nice big buck. I tried to introduce my wife into deer hunting. It was almost a disaster. One of my close buddies, myself, we were going to team up. My wife was going to ride with us. He says, well, let your wife drive. We'll sit on the fender of the truck, and we can see the road better. We pick up a track a little bit better. So we had a little communication thing going between me and my wife. I said, if I go like this, speed up. If I do like that, I mean slow down. So first thing we started out, I kept trying to get her to move the truck. Finally, she got it going. We was going along pretty good. I slowed down. This took place two or three times. Well, unbeknownst to my buddy and myself, she was looking way down the road, and we was watching the ground right here by the truck looking for these tracks. She kept getting faster and faster, and I kept going, slow down, slow down, slow down. And all of a sudden, she stuck her head out the door, hollered, turkeys, turkeys, and slammed on brakes and launched me and my buddy off those fenders. As we were sailing through the air trying to keep our guns from getting destroyed in the sand, I looked up down the road, and two buzzards flew out the ditch. So she didn't know the difference in a turkey and a buzzard, being that she was freshly up here from Cuba. But that was, you know, it was just a fun thing. And we used to spend a lot of time in the woods camping, and whatever we ate, we took care of it. We didn't waste any of the meat. We used the hide if we could and a lot of the bone. And it's just a old traditional thing, which takes place, I'm sure, all over the rest of the country where people do a lot of hunting and all.
Now, in Florida, is it still legal to hunt with dogs? Is it one of the few states?
It's a lot of areas you can still hunt with hounds, but like I said earlier, property is being gobbled up so much by developers and all, and land's getting squished in, and it's almost impossible to run deer with dogs anymore because you're infringing on somebody's property, either a golf or course or a housing development. So more people are going to that still hunting thing.
Is there a particular kind of dog that was commonly used around here?
We used a combination of foxhounds and just a deer dog. Any good foxhound make a deer dog. We'd use the breed of Walker, Goodman, Trigg, July, black and tans, blue ticks, even beagles. We used all sorts of dogs, and we always found out a combination cross between a walker and a blue tick made an excellent trail dog and a good dog to stick on a running deer track. The best dog I ever had came from Missouri. I got her when she was 5 years old. I hunted her for 10 straight years. I could turn her loose by herself and look like she was magical. She could make a deer. In 15, 20 minutes, she'd find one and have him up running. Well, we had many, many hours of fun with those things. And occasionally, we would lose a real good dog. If he got out of an area and crossed a highway, there was a lot of heavy traffic, we'd lose him to that. Occasionally, we'd lose him to snake bites. And every once in a while, we'd lose one to an alligator. If you ever got to a real swampy place where it's really infested with alligators, we've lost several of them to alligators. And the way we found out this, high tech was great. They put these tracking collars on these dogs, go out there with your little detector and try and locate where those babies are, track that thing to a hole of water and find out an alligator's walking around with that tracking collar in his belly. True story. Those tracking collars were quite expensive, about $500 a piece.
Did you ever do any alligator hunting or anything?
Used to do a little of that with a buddy of mine, and of course, we both got enough age on us that we can't handle that too much anymore. It wasn't anything traditional about catching alligators. Just make sure you didn't get your fingers or your feet or your arms or legs in between his jaws. And that was interesting. Just old Florida crackaways is all it amounts to.
So did you catch alligators for the meat, or was it because they were nuisance animals?
Well, this buddy that I went with, he had a state trapper's license, and he would get the nuisance gators. And back years ago, this was a funny thing. Several of my friends and myself found out. Let me tell you folks something about it. You've heard, and I know you've read this in the papers and seen, they talked about alligators were on the endangered list. There were no alligators in the state. Well, right in the peak of that thing when they were talking about no alligators, I could have taken anybody in this whole camping area in one creek in St. Johns County and show you anywhere from 40 to 150 alligators in one creek. There has never been a scarcity of those things. But anyhow, when the state says, okay, you guys can start getting these alligators, but you can only sell the hide, they'd have to take that carcass, dispose of it, take it out in the woods, let it rot. That upset me to no end. Alligator meat is pretty good eating if you never had any of it. It is not bad at all. So a bunch of my friends, we made some contacts with different people around the state, and we call Tallahassee, says, hey, this is a sin. You're wasting some God's good food. This stuff would go to nursing home, prisons, or wherever. A lot of people would love it. And now, guess how much alligator meat is a pound? $12 a pound. $12 a pound. So things go around, change, but basically that's about it.
But mostly the kind of hunting that was done around here was turkey hunting and deer.
Turkeys, deer, hogs, quail, squirrels. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of people used to like take hound dogs out and catch coons, go chase coons out of somebody's cornfield at night. That got to be a problem.
How so?
Running through the woods at night, you never knew when you're going to run up on a big old moccasin or a rattlesnake. I don't like that.
Right. Were there any other kinds of traditions they had with deer hunting especially?
Well, a lot of duck hunters. We had a lot of people that hunted ducks, and I never got into that on account of moccasins. I'm a little bit allergic to snake bite. I've been very fortunate. You want to hear a snake story?
Sure.
This is absolute truth. My wife sitting over there can verify this. In St. Johns County, there's a road that leads out of St. Augustine, goes all the way to St. Johns River. It's about 26 miles long. And about 35, 40 years ago, they were resurfacing that road, and it was a solid streak of lime rock. Well, we were riding along, going to see one of my uncles. And as we were riding along, I took my 22 rifle, let her shoot, and this time she didn't put her foot on the brake. And I would shoot moccasins in a ditch in this one swampy area. So when we got almost to the other edge of that swampy area, I saw this thing laying on the road way up ahead of us, about a quarter of a mile, and I thought that was a small stick of pulpwood when I first looked at it. And as we kept easing along, I said, that thing has moved over to the side more. So I says, you know, I believe that's a rattlesnake. Then she put the brake on, and we were about from here to the museum for us. Says, that snake can't strike quite this far. We need to get close. So I got up there and shot that snake right in the back of his eye, and he just twisted, curled up. I took my rifle barrel, and I picked him up, and I had a cardboard box. that quart cans of Gulf Pride oil had come in. So I picked that snake up and put him in that box and laced the lids, folded them shut where they overlap each other. Going to have a big joke on my uncle. When we get out to my uncle's farm, well, he wasn't at his farm. He was at a country store right in the community. There's my uncle, two of his brothers, a whole bunch of the farming neighbors, a bunch of farm hands. And I picked a box up, and I said, I want you fellas to see what I found coming on the road. Well, my uncle's name was Milton Rahare, but he was about 5'8" and weighed 400 pounds. His nickname was Fats, obviously. He stopped about from here to the speaker over there. He says, don't get any closer. That boy got a rattlesnake in that box. I can smell him. I said, you know I'm not going to. I set that box down on the ground and opened it up, and that rattlesnake came out of that box across my elbow right there with his mouth wide open. And immediately I started going backwards. I thought I rolled backwards and got out of the way. Also had a kind of an accident right there. That stuff will make glands work that you don't think you have sometimes. After I killed that rascal the second time, the man that owned this store came out. Bud Pursley was his name. He says, Stuart, how far can you jump forward? I says, I don't know, not too far. He says, if you can jump twice as far forward as you can backwards, we're going to make some money. I said, what do you mean? He said, you jump from, he took his foot. He said, that's where your heels were. He says, now, you did a flip in the air. I said, no, I didn't. I rolled backwards. He says, you'd never touch the ground between your heels leaving there, and here's where your fingertips and your knees, you landed on your hands and knees. It was 9 feet. I said, I didn't do that. I rolled. He says, everybody says, you did a flip in the air. And my wife, Irma, she says, I was looking at you out the window, and she says, it was a vanishing act. You disappeared. Lord have mercy, I ain't never playing no more rattlesnakes. Put the fear of God in me. Then I had to go to my uncle's house, take a bath, wash clothes, and borrow clothes from one of his brothers. Because it really was a mess. But that's about it, Miss Tina.
Well, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you said you got your first deer when you were 21. Aren't a lot of kids in North Florida raised from pretty young, you know, learning how to hunt and
do you folks, have you had the opportunity to listen to Sam Persetti? Do you know who he is? He's a guitar picker. I've been accused of being his daddy. And I guess it's so. Well, when he was 9 years old, he got a chance to kill his first deer in the little group that we were in. And that poor little fella, this lady sitting here with that red shirt, his face looked just like that all over. We smeared blood on that kid, and it kind of got to him. He started crying and all. And my oldest boy, Elliot, he killed his first one when he was 16. So I got my kids involved in it pretty early. And my daddy, when I was just a little kid myself, about 5 years old, my daddy loved to hunt quail. He had bird dogs, and he loved to shoot quail, and I could tag along with him doing that. And he died 48 years ago today. Today is his anniversary, and he was 44. And he and I never got a chance to do very much playing together, mostly working. And after all those years, you still miss somebody like that. But he passed on a lot of things to me. A trade was one of them. Love of music was another. And love of the country. He instilled that in me. Take care of it. Love it. Don't abuse it. And I try to do that as best I can, my humble way.
Stuart, a lot of Stuart's activities revolve around things like working, you know, with the cast nets and fishing and things like that. And so he's of course, he sees what's happening in many parts of the state with a lot of development and more people moving in, and he's very active in trying to promote different kinds of laws, I would say, that would make things better for the natural environment. Do you want to talk about any of that?
One of the things I would like to see the state of Florida institute a season for catching shrimp. Over on the East Coast, in a very short period of time, the small shrimp are being hatched out now. May and June, they hatch out. And they will migrate out of the salt water, go into St. John's River, and work their way south, and they grow. By the 1st of September, you'll make a good-sized shrimp. You'll have about 30, 35-count shrimp, which is a pretty nice shrimp, big enough to fry. Well, there is no season on them. And people go out there in the middle of July and they catch hordes of little bait shrimp, fill those freezers up with bait shrimp. And when they do get a chance to get big enough, well, they'll throw those out and then go get some bigger shrimp. And to me, that's a sin and a waste. I hate to see that. Talking about loving the land, I don't know if it's appropriate we should do it. I should have brought my guitar. I made up a song about, "Dear Lord, what has happened to this land I love?"
Can you sing it without the guitar?
I couldn't do it. I need to have that guitar. I can get it in a second if you want to do it. Yes, sir, if you got one.
This thing about the way the fall has changed, of course, my ancestors came here many, many, many years ago, in the middle of 1700s. I grew up in a place where the land was basically open and free.
I could leave my house right at the edge of St. Augustine. I could drive to the St. John's River, never cross a paved road, or never go through a fence. And that's all changed. I can't hardly get out of my own neighborhood now without having to go to a red light someplace. And I'm not in the city limits. I'm on the outside of town. Where's that gentleman said he had that guitar?
Yeah.
Heck, I believe mine was closest right there underneath that oak tree.
I don't know.
He's coming.
I don't know if all of you are familiar with the Menorcans. I'm sure some of you are, but the Menorcans were a group of people that came to settle in the New Smyrna Beach area during the British rule in the 1760s, and most of them came from Italy, Greece, Menorca. And they were brought over as bonded people. They had to work a certain length of time before they were free to pursue whatever they wanted to. And a lot of their descendants do still live in the St. Augustine area today. And, of course, Mr. Pacetti is one of those descendants.
That a little better? Can you hear that better? Okay, this is kind of a humble thing, but it tells you how an old cracker like me feels about what's happened to this state. And I've been thinking about this a lot of years. Dear Lord, what has happened to this land I love? No finer place can I think of. Well, Florida has changed, and that is for certain. And the ache in my heart will never quit hurting. In my younger years, I roamed this old state when the fishing and hunting were nothing but great. Mighty St. John's was loaded with bass. Millions of fish beds were found in eel grass. Docks and boat houses now cover the shore. The natural beauty is changed evermore. We could fish all week long, Lord, without any trouble. Now the numbers of boats have quadrupled in double. Litter and trash cover the banks. The fish and the wildlife can offer no thanks. Dear Lord, what has happened to this land I love? Well, the woodland is crowded with homes and golf courses. The scene that it makes is completely atrocious. When woodland is cut down, the wildlife must scatter to the greedy developers. Oh, this does not matter. Turkeys and deer have to fight for survival. They give up their woodland to these new arrivals. Yes, Florida has changed, and that is for certain. And the ache in my heart will never quit hurting. Dear Lord, what has happened to this land I love? Well, the beaches are covered with condos, you know. No longer can the poor cracker man go to cast his net there in the surf. The newcomers think that it's only their turn. They complain about this and complain about that. I've heard it so much that I just have to shout. Don't move to my homeland, please stay in some city. What's happened to Florida is really a pity. Yes, Florida has changed, and that is for certain. And the ache in my heart will never quit hurting. Dear Lord, what has happened to this land I love?
That's it. Thank you, thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Pacetti about hunting or fishing or anything like that? No. Well, you can. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of. If you don't have any questions, I see a couple folks that over there we were talking while I'm sitting there knitting those cotton picking nets. Whoa! If I ever, I'll be on this one. This one net I'm working on, folks, is going to be a 10-foot shrimp net with a half-inch mast. When I get through, it's going to have 151,000 knots tied in it. I hope I live long enough to finish it. Folks, have a great trip. Thank you for coming to White Springs.
And please go over and talk to Stuart Pacetti over there and ask him about some of his nets. And we're